Call the House Transportation Meeting to order. It's February 9th. The time is 1:38. Members present are Co-Chair Stutes, Representative Kopp, Representative Sullivan Leonard, and Representative Drummond is walking in the door. We do have a quorum for business. Please silence your cell phones. And if you need to pass any notes staying with the table, do so through Laura Steidolf, our committee staffer. I'd like to also thank Heather Evoy and Summers Cole for also staffing this committee, helping out with us. Today, the order of business is invited testimony on House Bill 60, the Motor Fuel Tax Transportation Maintenance Fund. We have some people calling in, I believe. I don't see them on the... Too new? Okay, we got it. We have some callers and possibly someone in the room also available for testimony. So without any further delay, I will take invited testimony. First one is Nick D'Andre from UPS. Nick, are you on the line?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Please state your name, affiliation, and present your testimony.
Sure. Good afternoon. I'm Nick D'Andre, Vice President of Public Affairs with UPS. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for allowing me to testify via teleconference. I was up there last week and got to meet many of you, so I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony today on the motor fuel tax bill. UPS appreciates the longstanding working relationship that we've had with the state of Alaska. We have roughly 1,100 employees with roughly 489 pilots who are domiciled there. Traditionally, Alaska has played an important role in UPS's global reach. Not only do we deliver to thousands of customers daily, but Anchorage for the last 10 years has served as our gateway to the Asia-Pac region. Because of that, we've actually located our training facilities for our MD-11 and 747 fleets to Anchorage. And you may have recently heard the news that we've purchased 14 747-8s with the option to purchase another 14. And we hope to be able to be flying those into Ted Stevens International Airport sometime in the future. UPS located in Alaska because of the business-friendly climate created by elected leadership. We pay close to $6 million in taxes as well as approximately $7.2 million in landing fees annually to cover costs at the airports. We sympathize with the situation you all are faced with. I can tell you that I don't think there's anybody that envies the situation you all are faced with as far as the outlook for budgetary needs with the state of Alaska. And I know that we are here to try to help be a part of the solution, which is why I want to talk to you a little bit about the motor fuel tax and the jet fuel tax. UPS is in a unique situation as it relates to the proposed motor fuel tax bill because basically we would be hit in two different ways, both on the in ground in the form of the motor fuel tax and air in the form of the increased jet fuel tax. Now, I can tell you that after last year discussing with many of you that, everybody's going to have to pay their fair share, we actually support the increase in the motor fuel tax. And last year, I think we kind of were silent on that, but we are supportive this year of the increase in the motor fuel tax because it's a pure user fee. And I'll explain that here in a minute, how that differentiates itself from the jet fuel tax. And not that, UPS uses most, if not all, the roads in Alaska. And so since the gas tax is a user fee, we do believe we should pay our fair share. However, we do oppose the jet fuel tax because it's not a user fee. UPS and other airlines already pay user fees to airports in the terms of landing fees. I know I mentioned earlier that we pay roughly $7.2 million in landing fees to the international airport system each year, and the international airport system is self-sustaining and requires little, if any, state funding, as the passenger and commercial airlines pay for operational support and infrastructure improvements. Increasing the jet fuel tax will also increase the indirect subsidy to airports. Currently, there are 17 FAA-certified airports where there are no landing fees and which UPS does not use. So, in essence, the money that we would be paying in the additional fuel taxes is going back to support airports that we do not utilize. So this is not what we consider a user fee. In addition, UPS, Delta, and other members of the aviation community, including those involved in Airlines for America and the Cargo Airlines Association, are concerned that targeting the aviation industry for a budget shortfall could cause a reduction in cargo and commercial flights to Alaska. That could also cause an accelerated push toward dependence on newer aircraft that can bypass Anchorage. There are already a few players that are that have purchased the 777s or the 747-8s that are able to fly straight from certain locations without having to stop in Anchorage. And a decrease in the number of flights in this area raises further concerns, including the potential of diminished investments in infrastructure if not as many airlines are paying into the aviation fund through fuel taxes. Again, UPS empathizes with the state of Alaska and its budget issues. We appreciate the partnership we've had here on the growth-friendly environment that has allowed UPS to operate here over many years, and we hope that you will greatly consider the consequences of what an increase in the jet fuel tax can mean to the great state of Alaska. So thank you to the members of the committee for listening to me today, and I'm going to stand on mute in case there are questions, Mr. Chair, if you'll allow questions. I'll stick around.
Thank you, Nick. We do have questions from the committee. Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. Do you have an estimation on how much that would be then if jet fuel is exempt annually?
Help me out here. You talking on the jet fuel tax language, or are you talking on the international exemption?
I'm discussing the jet fuel tax.
Maybe if you could rephrase your question. Are you asking how much it's going to cost us, UPS?
Through the chair, is there an estimation on how much was originally figured for the jet fuel tax, how less that would be then with the proposal? I mean, have you estimated how much you may save, I guess? Or maybe I'm asking the wrong person, Mr. Chair.
Are you asking specifically about UPS's increase in fuel expenditures due to the increase in the jet fuel tax?
If they are exempt, how much would they save? Maybe I should word it that way.
Okay,
how much are they going to save?
How much
exempt?
If you didn't have to pay the increase, how much would you save, or how much would you be spending with the proposed increase? Do you have that number?
Yeah, okay, yeah. So that varies based on year. I mean, obviously, if we start flying the 747-8s, it'll be more than this. But right now, it could range from anywhere from 500,000 to over a million. That's where it stands now, is what the impact would be.
Thank you. Representative Kopp.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your testimony. We certainly appreciate UPS. I think you're one of the signatories there at Anchorage Airport and everything you bring. Question I have, of the 17 FAA-certified airports that you mentioned that you do not use, do any UPS packages go out to those airports?
Mr. Representative Kopp, I'm sure they do. In fact, I can tell you that I did look at, because this question has been brought up before, I did look to see the number. I want to say that the number is between, let's put it this way, it's less than 3,000 packages that would go out outside of the urban areas.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up on that, if I may, Mr. DeAndre. Just to clarify, less than 3,000 packages from UPS go out to the 17 rural airports in Alaska? I mean, the non...
I'm saying outside of Anchorage and Fairbanks, the number I have is there are very few, a very small percentage of our volume goes outside of the urban area. So it could be that, for instance, Fairbanks and Anchorage are the main drivers of most of the packages, but as far as going out into the rural areas using general aviation airports, I couldn't tell you the specific on the 17, but I did pull the numbers for the areas that we have to fly volume to, and it's less than 3,000 packages.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Stutz has a question.
Well, my question was along those lines, but for all the urban areas or the rural areas that you're through the chair. Excuse me, thank you. all the rural areas that these packages might go out to, and you're saying it's 3,000. I find it interesting. I know there's at least two UPS trucks in Kodiak and possibly three. And are we talking on an annual basis?
I'm talking, this is just air volume being flown in. So there could be, some of it could be trucked from place to place. It just depends on the need. For instance, if it's a package that's a two-day delivery, that would probably need to go by air. But if it's something that can be ground, there's other methods of getting it there in a longer period of time.
Everything that comes to through the chair, follow-up,
please.
Thank you. You can see I'm getting a little worked up about this subject. Well, everything that comes to Kodiak comes UPS Blue. There's no roads in. It comes by air.
In your case, yes. In your case, it would be. It would have to be by air. And the last volume for numbers that I show 3,000 packages that are delivered outside of those areas via air.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you because you would know your numbers better than I would. It just sounds a little odd. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No problem. Any other questions from the committee? I have a question or two, Mr. DeAndre. You mentioned other airlines possibly flying over, either using 777s or longer-range aircraft. It is my understanding that airplanes going international or coming from international are already exempt from the jet fuel tax. So if that were the case, this increase in tax wouldn't really affect an airline going overseas. Is that how you see it?
Correct, but we also do fly domestic routes between United States and Anchorage, so that's where the additional fuel tax would cost us, and on the passenger side for them as well.
I understand, but there's no need to, if we're talking about flying over Anchorage to avoid the tax, that would inherently be an international flight, correct?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, yes, that is true.
Okay, thank you. And currently, there is an aviation tax being paid, a jet fuel tax being paid, and it is not designated for airports. It just goes into the general fund. Do you have an objection with how it's currently structured?
You mean with in all honesty, we are paying for other airports currently, and this the increase in the tax would obviously force us to pay even more. I mean, the way I feel about it and UPS feels about it is that airports should be self-sufficient. So if they want to charge landing fees at their airports to cover their costs, then they should do that.
Okay. I know there's over 200 airports in Alaska, and I don't know that they all can be self-sufficient, but it is something we're working on. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. DeAndrea, thank you for calling in and testifying. I think the question we're trying to find the answer to here is does Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport actually need this additional revenue since they're already totally self-supporting through the landing fees and other taxes which the air carriers consortium that funds the airport provide? And would this increase in the jet fuel tax, is it something that the Anchorage International Airport system and the Alaska International Airport system is seeking, or is this a problem that we're discovering as we go through the process on this jet fuel tax increase?
Thank you for that question. I don't know if the Deputy Commissioner Bindner is there and wants to address that. I do know that my understanding is the jet fuel revenues, since the Alaska International system is self-sufficient, that the current jet fuel taxes do not go back to Anchorage Airport or Fairbanks Airport. They go to other airports. So I don't know if Deputy Commissioner Bindner's in the room can answer that better than I can. But that's my understanding.
We do have Mr. Bindner in the room. I don't know if we want to have him up now or wait till the invited testimony is over, and then there may be more questions. I think if you stay on the line, Nick, and we will get Mr. Bindner up here. We also have a representative from Delta Airlines, so we want to go through all our calling in invited testimony first. But again, my understanding now, and Mr. Bindner can address this, is that the aviation or the jet fuel tax that we are collecting goes directly into the general fund. So it could be going into schools or things besides transportation for that matter. So, but again, we'll get some other people up here to testify on that. Are there any more questions for Mr. DeAndre? Seeing none, we will move. And thank you for your testimony, Nick. And stay on the line, please.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we'll go to Dana Deeble from Delta Airlines. Dana, are you on the line?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Can you identify yourself and your affiliation, and we welcome your testimony.
Thank you very much. My name is Dana DeBell, and I'm the Managing Director of State and Local Government Affairs for Delta Airlines. I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify today and echo many of the similar sentiments that were put forward by Nick from UPS just earlier. Delta Airlines is proud to be the second largest commercial carrier in the state of Alaska. We carry roughly about 12% of the state's passengers on commercial traffic in and out of Alaska. We operate year-round to Anchorage and Fairbanks, and we operate seasonal service to Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan. We've, over the last few years, worked on expanding our footprint in Alaska, and we look forward to continuing to try to do that as we continue to grow as a company and an airline, and particularly as we continue to grow our hub in Seattle, which has grown 100% in terms of seat capacity in the last 3 years alone. Like UPS, we have concerns that basically a tripling of the jet fuel tax in Alaska will take Alaska from what is a relatively competitive position on jet fuel taxes today and make it one of the more expensive states in terms of effective tax rate in the country going forward. There are a number of states that actually don't tax jet fuel at all, and then there are a number that have sort of effective caps that are significantly lower than what the effective tax rate would be in Alaska if this were to move forward. Alaska is a challenging competitive environment to operate in today. And so anything that makes it more challenging from a cost perspective is always going to make it more difficult to attract competition and additional service into the market. Delta Airlines is not opposed to paying its fair share. Much like UPS, we pay landing fees and rental rates. We have passenger facility charges, and we help support lease arrangements with airports that we operate in, and fuel flowage fees in addition to that. But our concern comes with the additional increase in the rate. Our understanding is that money would go to airports outside of Anchorage and Fairbanks and go to support the infrastructure projects there or the operations there. And we maintain that the appropriate way to deal with the cost of operation at those is through direct negotiation with the airlines that operate there, or the other aviation partners that utilize that airport. And so with that, I thank you for your time today, and we'll stay available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Are there any questions? Representative Kopp.
Thank you. The Alaska Air Carriers Association, in reading your memo, I see you're requesting an amendment to repeal the existing floor and flight exemption. The bill as it stands now, did you take a formal position on it?
A couple points. Delta Airlines is not a member of the Alaska Air Carriers Association. And so the position taken in that letter is not one that is reflective of ours. Our position on the current bill is that we don't support the increase as it currently sits in the bill, and we'd be open to working with members of the committee to come to a appropriate solution moving forward.
Follow up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Yeah.
other questions from the committee? I guess I have a couple. Do you currently have international flights that would be taking advantage of the fuel tax exemption that currently exists?
No, Delta operates domestically in and out of the state of Alaska.
And that's your only, those are your only flights? You don't have any that the fuel up in Anchorage and go to Asia or Europe or anywhere from here internationally?
We do not.
Okay, thank you. And you mentioned direct negotiations. So I guess what I'm getting from your testimony is that you see the need for the state of Alaska increasing revenue from different sources, and you're not opposed to that, but instead of a tripling of the current jet fuel tax, you would prefer to negotiate a separate deal for Delta or for other airlines to do so with the state independently as opposed to a across-the-board increase. Is that what your testimony says?
I thank you for the opportunity to clarify that. What I intended by that is in airports that we operate in, we often, almost always, pay landing fees and or rental rates for terminal leases and those kinds of things. And when airports are in need of raising revenue, it usually happens through a direct negotiation, either around landing fees or landing fee adjustments, increase or decrease, whatever is appropriate at the time, and or a lease negotiation for the space that we are utilizing with inside the terminal, on the apron, inside hangars, if those are applicable, back of house space, et cetera. And so that is what I was referring to.
Okay, thank you. So you're talking about facility usage and not fuel tax. Are you guys okay with the current fuel tax level? I assume you are, because you're still currently flying in and out of Alaska, and those taxes go into a general fund at the moment. I assume that's agreeable to your company.
We are not looking for additional exemption from the existing fuel tax rate.
Okay, thank you. I see no more questions from the committee. I think at this point we'll ask Mr. Bender to come up here. You could state your name and for the record. And
afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Bender, Deputy Commissioner of Aviation for Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. In that role, I also serve as the Executive Director for the Alaska International Airport System, which includes Anchorage and Fairbanks International. So they are state-owned and operated, but they are set aside from the other 240 airports. We treat them as the International Airport System, the self-sustaining enterprise fund. No revenues flow out of them to the general fund, and vice versa. The system doesn't take general funds for their operating costs either. So, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd be happy to address the question Mr. DeAndre had earlier.
Sure, and if you could repeat the question in case we forgot it already.
Right, my understanding of it was, does jet fuel that is collected at Anchorage and Fairbanks International right now, that fuel tax revenue, does that flow to the Alaska International Airport System? And the answer is no. That is a state fuel tax, and all fuel tax revenue collected across the state, regardless of what airport it's collected at, flows into the general fund. The rest of his question that he did go on to talk about things like rates and fees, landing fees that Mr. Bell talked about as well, all of those other revenues do flow, if they're collected at Anchorage and Fairbanks, into the International Airports system, International Airport Revenue Fund, this enterprise fund, to maintain the operating and capital costs each year for that system.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Bender? Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. Could you also clarify about the landing fees? Does that go into the International Airport Fund, or is there a portion that goes into the state general fund?
Sure, through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard. No, and as Mr. Bell talked about, Yes, so landing fees that are collected at Anchorage and Fairbanks International, they're just one of many of the fees that are collected to cover those operating costs, and those all flow into the International Airport Revenue Fund. Okay. The remaining airports across the state, right now, carriers and users are able to use free of charge. We do not have any other sort of rate and fee structure in place at any airport except for Anchorage and Fairbanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought you had said that prior, and I just wanted to make sure that's what I had heard. Thank you, sir.
And any other questions? In your capacity right now at DOT, are you solely, is your sole responsibility the Anchorage International Airport, or do you oversee other airports?
Mr. Chair, so I oversee the Anchorage and Fairbanks International airports for part of the system goes, but then I am also can oversee the general operations of the remaining 240 as well.
So you know the state, you know their needs aren't being met currently, and any additional revenue that comes in through jet fuel or aviation gas would go to these other 200 airports, and I guess you realize that they are not self-sufficient at this point, and in your opinion, that would be a needed use for those funds.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
It's kind of a loaded question, but
general
basically
operating costs for our rural system, which is we consider everything except Anchorage and Fairbanks,
right,
is approximately $40 million per year. And right now, the fuel tax revenue we're bringing in is about $4.5 million. So, yes, there's certainly still a big difference between the operating cost and the revenue we're bringing in. There is quite a need for additional revenue.
And do you have a response when others are saying, well, Anchorage and Fairbanks are totally self-sufficient, we pay landing fees, et cetera, the additional fuel tax will go to other airports that aren't really our concern? As a deputy chair, do you have a response to that?
Mr. Chair,
you can pass if you like.
No, and I think it's a fair thing to respond to, and I certainly appreciate Nick and Mr. Bell calling in. You know, the discussion was brought up about the international fuel tax exemption, and I think that's a case where that argument holds true, where you have international carriers passing through Anchorage and Fairbanks who literally aren't opening the doors, cargo's not coming off those aircraft, so they're certainly not using our rural airport system. When you start talking about passenger carriers or UPS and FedEx, where there was a discussion already on packages that flow to rural Alaska, and obviously 82% of our communities are not connected by the road. So those passengers that come to Anchorage and Fairbanks to fly out on passenger carriers or the cargo that's coming into those hubs as well is utilizing our rural system as well.
Right. Thank you. Got some questions now. Representative Eastman, who I didn't recognize as being here earlier, but is here.
So. Thank you. Through the chair. Now, how many of the 240 airports that the state maintains charge landing fees? Do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, zero.
Follow up.
Through the chair also. So that being the case, I think UPS does make a good point that there doesn't currently seem to be a tying use to cost in those situations. And I'm wondering why there isn't any landing fees. Has the department taken a position on whether or not landing fees should be implemented in those situations?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the governor tasked the department almost 2 years ago now to investigate revenue generation options for precisely that point, that there does seem to be discrepancy between the users of those facilities and the revenue being generated by those. As part of that effort, we engaged with many stakeholder groups, including the Aviation Advisory Board, investigated several different options, whether it was an aircraft or aircraft registration fee, an airport user fee, landing fees, fuel tax. And the overwhelming feedback we got from the carriers and the stakeholder groups was that, one, the goal wanted to be equitable and fair across all users and not increase the administrative costs or the burden on the state to collect that revenue. And the fact that there was already a fuel tax in place and a system capable of collecting that 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 would be the most equitable way to generate that revenue across the system.
Representative Drummond.
Actually, my question's been answered.
Thank you. Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. With regard to some of the other smaller municipal airports, my understanding, for example, at Wasilla Airport is that we do have leases that we have with the different operators that are there at that particular airport. So even if there's not landing fees, there are certainly many other fees that are incurred that go to the municipality for maintenance and operations and what have you. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, you're absolutely correct. And that is a difference you'll see with our local sponsors or the municipally operated airports, mm-hmm. is that they do strive to achieve self-sufficiency through some of those rates and fees they impose. Okay. On our rural system, we also have lease rates for tenants that are on the airport, but those are the only revenues being collected at state airports.
Okay, thanks.
Seeing no further questions, Mr. Bender, when you talk about landing fees, does that include every single aircraft? Like for in Anchorage, for example, is there a size limit, or is it every guy that has a Cessna? Or where's your cutoff?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The way a landing fee generally works, and how it works at Anchorage and Fairbanks International, is we charge a certain rate per 1,000 pounds of certified maximum gross takeoff weight. That way you don't get into problems with people claiming, hey, my plane was only half full, so I should only pay half the fee, those kinds of things. But it's per 1,000 pounds. So typically when we get down to smaller type aircraft, whether it's below 6,000 or 12,000 pounds, which there's lots of the private general aviation categories that fall into some of those weight areas, then it tends to become more just of a flat fee at those rates. And then once you start getting up into the larger passenger type aircraft, then it's just per 1,000 pound.
If I may follow up, so what would the typical, for the smallest, your minimum flat fee, what would that be at Anchorage Airport? And is that includes the float pond of the lake, what's it?
Right, Lakehood.
Lakehood as well?
Right. Mr. Chair, I don't know what our current minimum weight rate is right now for Anchorage and Fairbanks. I'll have to get back to you.
All right, thank you.
On that. But as a rough guess, or not as a guess, but like for example, 737 or 747-800, they're paying approximately $3,000 per landing based on their size. But obviously they're the largest aircraft landing.
Yes. Okay, thank you. And is Lakehood included in with landing fees?
Mr. Chair, Lakehood is not included in landing fees.
Thank you. Representative Kopp? Did you have a question? No. Any further questions? Well, I think we will thank you for your testimony, Mr. Bender, and thank you for those who called in, Mr. Dondre and Mr. Bell. We're going to set this bill aside till next week. We'll have Brian Fetcher, OMB policy analyst, available for questions on HB 60. And with seeing no further business today, the meeting will be adjourned at 2:15. Thank you.